Ed picks up the discussion. This is the Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren by Gerald Brittle. Ed picks up the discussion. He just returned from England. By the way, there's a scenario going on that I'm getting clippings on. It's happening right now. We're having people check it out. And I may read about it to you. I mean, I'd be hot off the press. I mean, a real live poltergeist. Ed picks up the discussion. He's just returned from England the day before. His trip to the United Kingdom was to visit a family in whose home inhuman spirit phenomena have been occurring with increasing regularity over the past 3 years. It was Ed's third visit to Enfield in the last year alone. This time, the purpose of his visit was to gather evidence of the phenomena occurring in the house, which could be used as proof for the need to exercise the premises. Remember, in the Donovan case and in the Devil in Connecticut case and all these cases, these are Catholic lay people. They don't exercise a place without formal church permission. And to obtain that, evidence is gathered to support the claim that inhuman spirits inhabit the place. This Enfield case makes Amityville look like a playhouse. There ain't no way Amityville would look like a playhouse. This Enfield case makes Amityville look like a playhouse, says Ed. I mean that truly. The Lutzes were able, those are the Amityville people, the Lutzes were able to move out after 28 days of terror. This is a case where the people can't move out for economic reasons. I mean, there are some things worse than being broke. And I've had to put up with the disturbance for 3 years. I mean, if I couldn't solve my economic problem in 3 years, I'd at least run from the devil. Those who have been victimized, as the London press has exhaustively reported, are a divorced 50-year-old woman and her 3 children who live together in a government-supported... That's it? Government-supported. There it is. In a government-supported council house in the North London suburb of Enfield. Wherever you get in the clutches... I mean, that's what happens to you when you get in the clutches of the government. Economic and devil oppression. In the family, there are 2 girls, age 15 and 12 at this time, and a boy of 8. Though phenomena first erupted in August 1977, the case began in 1976, when the 2 girls drew inhuman entities into the house after playing with, you guessed it, a Ouija board. I mean, these Warrens, they really got themselves a case against the Ouija board. The girls had no sinister purpose in using it. They simply had nothing else to do and were playing with the board as a game. That's why I try to keep you folks busy. Unfortunately for them, London is a spiritually active place. As a result, the girls made contact with a demonic spirit that did its thing. And wrangled permission out of the girls to enter the house. This has widened my pupils so much I can read anyway. A few weeks later, this spirit infested their home. But it didn't come alone. It brought six buddies along. There ain't no way you should ever refer to a demon as a buddy. I mean, even, you know, a little bit of license goes along with literary expression, but that's carrying it too far. Those six spirits are present in the home right now as I'm speaking. Quote, when the spirits were first drawn in, the usual run of infestation phenomena erupted. Knockings, rappings, scratchings, poundings, and so forth. As time went on, the phenomena upgraded. I'm telling you, by the time this guy gets to the last chapter, he's really lost his style. You don't upgrade demonic phenomena. I mean, they need to let me just rewrite this book. I mean, I could tell the story and not misuse phrases. The phenomena downgraded or outgraded, didn't upgrade. Objects materialized. People levitated, especially the girls. Object materialized, levitated, especially the girls. Joe. Finally. I gotta shut these loudmouths up in here. What have they been drinking before I got here? That eggnog you brought me didn't have any nog in it. You. As time went on, the phenomena upgraded. Objects materialized. People levitated, especially the girls. I ain't never seen a levitated girl. And a number of black forms manifested and floated around the house at night. After the mother. Joe, you call Chris and you tell her to tell Jim to send my pipe bag with Jim. I got to get this place warmed up. This is getting scary. Yeah. You got that, Joe? Pipe bag. Black forms. A number of black forms manifested and floated around the house at night. After the mother reported the problem to the local police, Constabulary. The police investigated the complaint. That's what they were, constabulary. They were police. Not just police, police. The police investigated the complaint, but to no avail. Why has Gloria been delirious for two nights in a row? In no time at all, however, the press got wind of the case. And reporters, you know, you all, you ain't fooling me. When I get back on this subject, you're scared like a bunch of kids and trying to overcompensate. In no time at all, however, the press got wind of the case, and reporters and psychic researchers descended on this brick row house. They'll never believe me, Celeste. Brick row house. And between 1977 and 1978, they not only put the family in the public eye, they thoroughly documented the reality of the phenomena occurring there. Then they went away without anyone once telling these people how they could get rid of the disturbance. I mean, you think the news media is going to eliminate something that's newsworthy? In fact, it seems no one even knew what was happening. The case had been dubbed the so-called poltergeist attack and was left at that. Ed's still talking. When I was in England in the summer of 1978, the case was brought to my attention and I visited the family. At that time, Ed goes on, I spent a week in Enfield. I thoroughly interviewed all the members of the family, separately and together, while witnessing the phenomena go on around me in the house. As a demonologist, I was able to see that these individuals were being systematically oppressed and sometimes even possessed by inhuman spirits. For example, the girls would levitate off the floor, crisscross in the air, and then be set back down again in a display of inhuman power. I can't read this. Ain't no way I can read this. I'm telling you, I was smart when I laid it aside and started talking about Jeremiah. I mean, this is just too unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It makes my nose run. Can't believe it. People, I just get my credibility built up, and here I go again. But it's interesting. Every week, in fact, it seemed one or the other of these two girls would be subject to levitation, often in the company of witnesses. The mother told me she has walked into the girl's bedroom and found her younger daughter sound asleep, levitating in midair. I just don't believe this. I don't believe this. On other occasions, she has witnessed her daughters rise up and down on the bed like a yo-yo, as she says, with none of them able to control the activity. The children also spoke about a black mass that manifests itself in their bedrooms at night and terrorizes them with its presence. Ed still talking. Even as I talked with the family, things would rise up in the air and float around the room. I'd quit talking. One evening, a wooden chair lifted up in the air, stayed still for a minute, then exploded. I don't believe this. On another occasion, a big, hefty rock, the size of a softball, manifested out of thin air in the middle of the living room and slammed to the floor with a thud. I later took that rock to a geologist at the University of London without telling him where I got it. I simply asked the professor to tell me where the rock could have come from. The stone, he said, is indigenous to only one place in the British Isles. That place is the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight is white or right? Well, it says white. That must have got to be it. We need to reprint this book. White. The Isle of Wight. I didn't know there was an Isle of Wight. I thought it was Isle of Wight. My geography gone to pot. The Isle of Wight is located, of course, in the English Channel, some 25 miles southwest of London. There's the crow flies. More serious than the outward phenomena, Ed continues, is what's happening to the children in this home. Now, I wouldn't believe this if it weren't for the credibility of the Warrens. I'd believe it. If you told me, Jerry, or if you told me, Mike. But I'd say, don't tell me out loud. Because ain't nobody going to believe us. The girls in particular are coming under episodes of possession where they take on the features of an old dead woman, according to the mother, and have the strength of an Amazon. The most dangerous feature of the possession episodes is that one of the daughters is often caused to attack her mother and attempts to kill her with her bare hands, and a number of times she's almost succeeded. A few weeks before I arrived, one of the girls came under possession. After the possessing entity stalked around the house, it put the girl in a state of agitated frenzy. The mother was forced to bring the daughter to a local hospital, where doctors worked for 6 or 7 hours trying to bring her out of it. The incident suddenly stopped after the spirit withdrew from her body, at which time she got up and simply walked out of the casualty ward. By far, though, the most compelling aspect to this case is the physicalized voice manifestations that occur in the house. The voices of 6 different spirits talk out loud in the room. It's as though there were 6 invisible people present. It's incredible. You can't believe it even when you're there. Even while the family is eating in the kitchen, the voices are speaking in another room. The British Society for Psychical Research, who worked on the case before I came in, went over the house with a fine-tooth comb and determined that in no way were the voices being projected by loudspeakers or by any other electronic means. The voices themselves speak with a distinct Cockney accent. The demonic spirit is a mimic, so here it speaks in Cockney because the family can understand it, although one of the spirits does lapse off into German when it prefers. And these voices are not a matter of some occasional phrase or sentence. They talk all the time. These spirits not only talk out loud to the people in the room when no one's addressing them, they talk to each other. They talk more than the people do. I think some of them are in here tonight. The British Society for Psychical Research have their own recordings of these spirit voices, but because their organization is private, the evidence has so far not been made available to the general public. I went there for the express purpose of getting these voices on tape, which could be used to document the need for exorcism, as they went to the Catholic Church. Did Ed get a recording of the voices? Did Ed get a recording of the voices? Did Ed get a recording of the voices? You better believe it, he replies, tapping a pair of cassettes before him on the table. Although it'll take some time before the contents of these tapes can be analyzed, the evidence is right here. And in my estimation, it represents some of the most important evidence yet on the existence of the inhuman spirit. I'll play them now. The tapes run for well over 3 hours. What comes across on them is something truly incredible. The recordings were made while Ed and his 2 assistants, Paul Bartz and John Kennyhertz, interviewed the mother and her 3 children in the Enfield home. While the 3 men were questioning the family, other voices, those of spirits can be heard speaking out loud in the room at the same time. Let's put the lights out. Go pull the wallpaper down. Throw the table. Stop him from going into that room. Were among the many comments the voices made when not being addressed by human beings in the house. Once, ever so often, a bizarre parrot-like voice interjected itself, saying only, "Hello." Sometimes the other spirits joined the parrot voice in a round of hellos. Are you all ready to take the consequences of mocking the reality of these spirits? Not all the sounds produced by the spirits were in the form of language. Fully 10% of the recording is taken up with grunts, moans, yicks, and the imitation of animal sounds, of which the most often repeated is that of a barking dog. As for communicating with these spirits, there was no evident problem. Sometimes the spirits addressed the people in the room, sometimes the people in the room addressed the spirits. The quality of the voices is extremely raspy and guttural. The elocution is definitely cockney, in fact so cockney it's quite hard for the American ear to sort out. The quality of the spirit statement would place them low on a scale of human intelligence, though they're far from ignorant. Most every question put to the spirits was answered. Although the inhuman voices usually supplied straight, rational replies, much of what they said was also nonsensical and capricious. There was a predominating voice in the crowd, and on this occasion, the spirit took the identity of Fred. It was to Fred that Ed Warren addressed most of his questions. What follows is an extract of that interrogation. Ed Warren. Hello? Voice. Hello? Ed Warren. Do you know who I am? Voice. Yeah. Who am I? Ed. That's right, Ed. Who are you? Freddy. You're Freddy, huh? What's your real name?
Yeah.
When are you going to leave here, Fred? 500 years. That's a long time. Can you move something to show us you're here? No. Why not? Tommy pulled my arm out. Oh, there's two of you. Put Tommy on. A new voice, though still gruff and guttural. Yeah, I'm Tommy. Ed, Tommy, how do you think we could get rid of all the problems that are happening in this house? Voice, kill the ghosties. Ed, kill the ghosties? Are you a ghostie? Voice, no. Ed, tell me, how did you get into this house? Voice, came up from under the floorboards. Ed, how many of you are there altogether? Counting slowly and deliberately. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six are here. No, 5. Ed, what are their names?
Freddy,
Tommy, Billy, Charlie, and Dick. John's not here. Where's John? Don't know. Who's the leader? Are you the leader? No, nobody. Nobody's the leader. I'm a liar. Who else is here? Is there anyone else here? Yeah. Who? Gutterman's here. Put Gutterman on. Let him speak. You are there, Gutterman? Yeah. Gutterman, what do you have to say? infield case makes Amityville look like a playhouse. I doubt that. But there were inhuman spirits infesting this house, and Ed recorded a conversation with their voices, invisible voices. Where's John? Don't know. Who's the leader? You the leader? No, nobody's a leader. I'm a liar. Who else is here? Is there anyone else here? Yeah. This is Ed Warren carrying on a conversation and recording it with these demon voices. Turn the lights down. Who else is here? Is there anyone else here? Yeah. Who? Gutterman's here. Put Gutterman on. Let him speak. Are you there, Gutterman? Yeah. Different guttural voice. This one a bit clearer. Gutterman, what do you have to say? Ed Warren asked. Voice. Yelping noises. This house is haunted. Kill the ghosties. Ed Warren. Gutterman, were you ever alive? Voice. Yeah. Ed, where? Voice. In soldiers. I'm a soldier. Ed, in whose army are you a soldier? Voice. All armies. I'm a soldier. Ed, who else is here, Gutterman? Voice. Zachary's here. Ed, put him on, Gutterman. Let Zachary speak. Voice. Suddenly there's an incredible moaning and groaning. The voice is utterly bizarre. The wailing ends up in a long cry of help, and it takes 10 seconds to come out. What was that? Ed said. Put Zachary back on. Voice. Woeful mourning recurs. Ed, who else is here, Fred? Voice. I ain't Fred, I'm Tommy. Ed, put Fred on. Fred, are you there? Voice. Yeah, Fred's here. Voice change indicates Fred speaking. Ed, Fred, put Zachary back on. Voice. Won't come. I'll tell you someone else who's here. Teddy's here. Teddy man's here. Ed, put Teddy man on, Fred. Yeah! Noise, then silence, broken every few seconds by a parrot-like voice saying, hello! The second voice then picks up and says, hello! To which the parrot voice responds with two hellos. A third voice joins in the hellos, then a fourth voice chimes in with it, hello! Then a fifth and a sixth voice join in, forming a chorus of parrot-like voices, all saying, hello, which build finally into loud, wild shrieks. The additional voices then fall away, leaving the original parrot voice repeating its singular, hello. All the while I was talking to these spirits, Ed notes during a lull in the tape, things were flying around the room. That's what those crashing and bumping sounds are in the background on the tape, he explains to the author who's listening to it. Chairs and tables were lifting and dropping. Small, little objects would whiz across the room, bounce off the wall. In the dining room, the wallpaper was peeling away from the walls as we watched. A butcher knife materialized in the lap of my assistant, Paul. A nail was also produced out of thin air. And as has come to be expected in the house, the spirits left excrement on the mother's bedroom carpet upstairs at 3 p.m. When the spirits on the recording weren't going through a fit of random insanity, they seemed to amuse themselves by filling the room with grunts and quacks, barks, shrieks, and a variety of other animal sounds, the most annoying being that of a shrill, screeching cat. One particular spirit put out a tortuous, unworldly howl, which brought on another exchange. I just don't believe this. But I believe Ed won.
This is the end of side one. For more of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side two. Thank you.